Welcome back to the Don't Worry About It podcast, where we talk all things mental health related, from anxiety to depression, from happiness to sadness, and all emotions and feelings in between. My name is David Izzo, and I started this podcast to help facilitate conversations related to mental health topics. On this week's episode of the podcast, I'm releasing a recording of a conversation I was asked to be a part of by Rabbi Chaim Pupko of Congregation Avas Torah in Englewood, New Jersey, the shul and town that I grew up in. Rabbi Pupko asked myself and Ben Small, the host of the Your Life Sucks podcast, where raw discussions about mental health are had, which was created for teens by teens.
I want to begin the conversation here with Ben and David by asking them to introduce themselves. Tell us about yourselves first, and tell us about what motivated you to do the podcast that you're each doing. So why don't we start in alphabetical of first names? We'll start with Ben, and then we'll go to David.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Ben Small. I'm 16 years old, and I'm a junior at SAR High School. And throughout my life, I've had an interest in mental health. I grew up hearing my grandfather, Arthur Small, share stories. He was a child psychiatrist, and he shared stories of how he treated patients, and that really initiated my interest in mental health. And it's always just fascinating to me how some people behave in different ways, and we've all been raised in the same household and we're all just wired completely differently. So that's always been a topic of interest for me. And then last year, SAR had a mental health day and the whole school got together and we had a mental health advocate speak to us about her experience with her child and how it led her to realize that mental health is really not spoken about and how it really has to be destigmatized. And then we broke out into breakout sessions, talking about different types of how to speak about mental health, all that stuff. And it really got me thinking, wow, this really needs to be tackled. And this summer, I wasn't really doing much. And I was thinking to my parents, you know, what could I do? Well, you know, what meaningful things can I do? And we came up with this idea of having a mental health forum where people would share their stories. And then the idea of a podcast was created. So a couple of weeks later, I had my first episode.
Amazing. All right, so David, please tell us again a little bit about yourself and how you came to your podcast, and then I have some follow-up questions for both of you.
Sure. My name is David Izzo. I'm 25 years old, born and raised in Englewood, New Jersey. Currently live on the Upper West Side, and I started this podcast because I was thinking a lot about mental health. I dealt with anxiety my entire life and some other mental health issues, and I realized pretty quickly that nobody was doing long form conversations on mental health for the common person and podcast form. I'm somebody who listens to podcasts very often and you hear conversations about certain things, but nobody was talking about it specifically. And I was thinking about it with my own group of friends and people that I've met throughout my entire life, where we get into these deep conversations about really anything ranging from dealing with anxiety or maybe dealing with issues of vulnerability, everything really in between. And so I figured if I could start a platform where I first tell my own story of dealing with things, I had a suspicion people might be willing to open themselves up, to take the risk and to come on and share their own stories from the common person by the common person. And that's been my mission and my goal ever since I started.
Got it. That's great. And I'm curious to hear from both of you. How do you find guests? How do you choose? How do you invite people to come on your show? Are you looking for certain topics? Are you looking for certain people? What's your process, David?
Yeah, so my process, I was very lucky. Some of my closest friends who I'd spoken about some of it, at least in depth, were the first ones that when I told them about it, they're like, I'll come on. And at first when I said that, I was like, are you sure? Like, would they really come on? And then when time came to when I really started, they stepped up. And from them coming on, it really became a lot easier. They started to share. They found it to be very very therapeutic on one part, and also another part being where they felt that they could help other people relate to them. And once a few of my good friends came on, their friends started listening to it. I've had people that I've asked to come on, but I've had a fair share of people come ask me and say, I want to be a part of what you're doing.
Interesting. Ben?
So I started like David. I started with asking a couple of my friends who I know have dealt with mental health, and they were willing to do it, and that was great. And yeah, I asked some people approached me, say, Ben, this is great. I really love what you're doing. Could I be on? So it's really a mixture of both.
Do you guys have a favorite episode, one episode in your mind that stands out that you like to reflect on or share with people or that you're most proud of, either one of you guys?
No, as I said, I've had some of my closest friends come on, and I hope they might be listening to this one day. And I like to think of it, I'm not a parent yet, but I like to think of it as having a favorite child. You can never admit it out loud, but of course I have one. I think it really depends on the person. I think everybody can take something from every single episode. You'll relate to some, you'll learn something, whether you've experienced it or not. So I'd start out with episode 3 on mine, my story, if you want to learn more about me and why I got into what I'm doing, but every episode you'll gain something valuable from.
You know, before we get to Ben, I want you to know, in my mind, I wasn't sure if I was going to ask that question because Seinfeld in his HBO special, his one of his earlier stand-up, at the end, he takes questions. And one of the questions people ask him is, do you have a favorite Seinfeld episode? And he says, oh, I get this question a lot. It's like asking, like, do you have your favorite child, right? They're all my babies. I worked hard on all of them. Right. So you captured it beautifully, which I don't know how that's going to help you, Ben, in case, I don't know if you do have a favorite episode.
I don't think I do. I would say the first episode was definitely the most exciting because I really had no idea what I was doing. It was just, learning how to talk to the person and really get out their story. And it was also my friend. So it was crazy to hear how she was going through these things that I had no idea. And she seemed so normal. So I was really in awakening, like, wow, like this is really not talked about, good for you for doing this. So that probably had the most effect on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now moving over to the concept of stigma in particular, I guess the way I would frame the question to you guys is, what do you see particularly as young people who have a very sophisticated sense of the landscape, at least amongst your social circles, the people you're exposed to? What is the current state of the stigma of mental health? Me personally, I feel like we're moving, we're progressing, but we have a long way to go. How would you characterize the current state of stigma? Either one of you guys, you can jump in.
Sure. Uh-huh. Ben, go ahead. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. So I think teenagers are hardwired to, at this time of our lives, we're distancing ourselves from our parents and we're trying to be independent. And, when we're faced with these difficulties like anxiety and depression, all that stuff, we want to kind of deal with it by ourselves because, we're adults now and we can do it. And we can't. We really need help. And just that haughtiness just kind of gets in our way. Another thing that I could think of is social media. I know that sounds so cliche, but really social media, when you see, just an abundance of pictures of people with a perfect life and a perfect family and perfect school and, a perfect face, there's really an ideal of perfectionism now. And when a teenager, feels anxious or feels depressed, they say, well, that's not perfect. I can't, express that. I can't share that with anybody. So that's also really another reason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the state of stigma, I think on the more common things, I think awareness on anxiety, depression, and more of the common well-known mental disorders, I think are quite high. But I do think there's a lacking in education on some of the more intense ones, whether it be dealing with people with borderline personality disorder, schizophrenia. I think those are more the mental illnesses where it's a lot more intense and it's a lot harder to deal with. I think that's where the stigma is lacking, but I don't think there's an awareness problem going on today, at least from what I'm seeing with what I've seen with my own friend group, with my communities, and everything that I'm seeing out, the messaging is getting out. I question whether the messaging has been right. And that's why we haven't fully gone as far with the stigma, but I'm more bullish than most on where we're at.
Well, what do you mean when you say that the message, whether the messaging is right? Can you speak more about that?
Well, I think that there's massive media campaigns about stopping the stigma. And I think that they're great in slogans and it gets a message out, but what is the message that we're actually conveying when we say stomp the stigma? What does that actually mean? It's a very cute bumper sticker. And I think the best way to actually stomp the stigma is to generate conversations. Why I'm so bullish on where we're at is I don't think 10 years ago this conversation happened. We have a rabbi of a community, two people from the community, someone who's in, the fact that Ben is in high school and is able to not only have the confidence and the ability to start this podcast, but to have kids his own age willing to open up on the podcast. That's where I believe the messaging does lie, not in the slogans. And as somebody who's a proud alumni of SAR, watching somebody like Ben at SAR do this is unbelievably, makes me even more unbelievably optimistic on where the messaging is going. I think podcasts and forums have actually become written content and verbal content is actually the better way to get out messaging rather than these campaigns on digital media that are cute and nice, but I don't think they get the job done.
I have to agree with David. I think, you know, these big mass social media campaigns on Instagram and that stuff, they really only a certain amount of people see them. Like I would say, you know, a whole group of my friends don't really see that because that's not really what appears on their For You page. So they don't really get the messaging. So, you know, maybe, I don't know how these campaigns would be able to do it, but, you know, targeting the people that they don't really reach, maybe that would have an effect. But definitely the conversations, you know, with everybody really opens, really destigmatizes it.
You know, both of you mentioned, you know, in different ways, referenced, you know, social media, the campaigns on social media or the effect of social media. I want to stay with that. I want to move to that topic for a little bit. And the first question I would want to ask you guys is, you know, what I'm hearing from you and what my observation is that, yeah, there's definitely more awareness of mental health issues and the challenges that can be presented by different things in our reality. But I think the challenges are also greater. The fact that our children's lives, our young people's lives have social media in it in a way that like I didn't have when I was growing up, there was no social media, it creates a new challenge. How would you describe the challenge of social media as you see it in your social circles, in your life, in your experience? Maybe we'll start with Ben.
Really just seeing that perfectionist mindset. You know, I once saw this girl's Instagram bio that said, "May your life be actually as good as it is on your Instagram." And, you know, we really present ourselves just as these perfect people. And then, you know, other people just feel sad and, you know, don't feel good about themselves and, you know, don't feel inclined to speak about their mental health issues. Another thing is that in these, you know, large social media accounts, there is a lot of false information about, you know, mental health issues. I like to post positive things on my Instagram account, and I've just read these posts and said, that is just not true. I mean, either they're understating the severity of something or they're overstating the severity of something. There's a lot of misinformation that could also add to the stigma of mental health.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that Ben said that I agree with. I think the way I look at social media is the way I look at really anything. You can use it or you can abuse it. And if you're willing to, you have to be very careful. Social media has allowed you to take any thought, any idea, and immediately put it out there to an audience, whether that's be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, so many different devices that connect you. And as we're all human beings, we all know that we don't always make the greatest decisions. Imagine you can get very angry very quickly and take a picture, send a tweet, throw out some words that you may not even mean, comments on that. Maybe having a bad day, you see someone's picture you don't like, maybe throw the not nicest comment out at them. It gives you a lot of power. And I think that with that power becomes a danger. And I think, I don't think the solution is not using social media, because I do think social media can do a lot of good. I think where it goes with mental health is you need to understand the raw power and impact that it can have on your life. There's a great thing that was just put out on Netflix, The Social Dilemma, where they really broke it down, how they engineer it. And I think that stuff is really important. I think you need to understand it, but at the end of the day, it comes down to personal responsibility and understanding that you have control over what you do and what you say. And in terms of content that's put out there, like I said, I think the messaging isn't great. I don't think you're going to destigmatize mental health through cute Instagram pictures. And I don't think the solution is posting pictures of yourself necessarily at your worst moments. I don't have a problem with you posting your favorite pictures on social media. I think at the end of the day, it's on the person who's looking at the content and telling themselves and understanding that that isn't their perfect life. That just because they smile in that picture doesn't mean they're happy. That onus is on the individual, is on the person.
Right. I wonder though if there's another element to social media and seeing, you know, this idealized image. Even if we ask, you know, a kid, a young person, you know, to take more responsibility for how they utilize social media, I think there's also the challenge of the fact that all your friends are on it, you know, anyway. And if you want to connect with your friends, if you want to connect with your peers, you know, you have to be on social media. And if you're not, you're missing out. And I think that creates its own kind of pressure. Is that something that you guys have noticed?
Definitely. I have never had Snapchat, and before getting Instagram back for my podcast, I hadn't had it for about a year. And, you know, I would walk into school sometimes and people, you know, my friends would be talking about, oh, yeah. And I'd have no idea what was going on because it happened over Snapchat, or it was about Snapchat, or it was about something that happened on Instagram. And really, yeah, you really do have to have it because, you know, you get kind of FOMO if you don't.
Yeah.
Right. I think FOMO is an excellent point. I think that I felt very dated when you said you don't even have Snapchat. Back when I was in high school, Snapchat was like the next big thing. So feeling very old there. But no, I do think that is a great counterpoint. There is a lot of pressure to have all the social media. And when you have the social media, you have access again to the information and you can see pictures of what everybody's doing. You have access to so much really information. I'll never forget the day before I deleted Snapchat off my phone. It was back in 2013. I'd seen everything that was going on all these people's lives, and I like stopped and thought about it. I was like, I've not seen this person in 5 years, and I know every intimate detail of their life. They're posting it all. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. And it was making me feel the fact that I was like feeling weird about it led me to just a decision just to delete it off my phone. Now, for me, that was easier said than done. And for some people, they don't have that. They might not be able to, they might not feel they're able to, especially as a teenage age, you feel like you need to have it. And I don't think there's really a solution. I don't think banning social media works. I don't think not having social media doesn't necessarily work either. I don't think the solution again is in the social media platforms.
Is there anything that you guys do personally, you know, something that you could share in terms of how you approach, you know, social media? You know, like David, you just mentioned, you know, when you deleted Snapchat. Is there anything else? Ben, is there anything that you do that's something, you know, some approach that you take in how to manage social media in a healthy way?
So I like to post for my Instagram account, and, you know, I tell myself I can only go on when I look for a picture and when I post the picture and maybe when I'm checking to see if an account has gone back to me for a collaboration or something like that. Really, you really have to, you know, set hard rules for yourself, and you can't, you know, rationalize your way out of them. Because once you do, I mean, I don't want to say it's like a slippery slope, but, you know, it is a slippery slope. And really just setting hard rules for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Setting boundaries.
Yeah, I personally didn't have Instagram until I started the podcast. I'm like learning it. I already see the addiction starting, waking up in the morning, checking my feed or looking at stories of people that I don't really even want to necessarily know anything about. And I've been thinking a lot about what I'm going to do to manage that. Setting disciplined times of when I can look at it, I think, is something that I'm considering. But I haven't noticed it really affecting me in any of my personal way. And as long as it's not affecting me personally, it's not taking away from anything productive, I'm not concerned about it from my personal self yet.
Yeah, yeah. I recently watched the Social Dilemma, which I recommend to everybody. I think it's such an important movie to watch. And it was interesting because some of the issues raised by that movie about how technology is designed to capture so much of our attention and to bring us back and to keep us scrolling and to keep us clicking. Like, I was aware of it, but to see it put that way in the movie was really, really startling for me. And I began to think differently. And I know that, you know, that idea of like waking up in the morning and looking at your phone, or you're working on something and your phone buzzes or your phone dings, and now you're checking something when you were in the middle of something else, is really, you know, so it indicated that part of the mental health discussion isn't, you know, it's definitely about the things we've been talking about, you know, until now, but it's also about how we allocate our attention and our awareness. And I wonder if you guys wanted to comment on this concept of, you know, the challenges that we face today, all of us, young people who are, you know, what, I don't know what the other term is besides young, I forgot the word, but, you know, the challenges we all faced of being bombarded by things. Is that something you guys have thought about, have talked on your podcasts?
I've never had a guest about, you know, seeing all these things, but, you know, now thinking about it, I mean, the fast speed pace that we live in, it's, you could easily get so anxious by, you know, what's going on. And I remember in March, I was like, you know, every day looking at the statistics of the COVID cases and the deaths and looking, and it was constant. And I realized, you know what? You have to stop, because, you know, it's not helping you. You're getting stressed out. This is, you know, detrimental to your mental health. So yes, the overwhelmingness can definitely be tough, and you have to restrict it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the word that comes to mind is you need to be mindful. Be aware of what you're consuming, how much time you're consuming. It's not a social media platform, but the first thing I remember thinking about, it must have been, now at 21 years old, coming back from yeshiva and thinking a lot about how I was spending my time and how I was going to allocate it. And I was very addicted to fantasy football. And then I started thinking a lot about how this was something I was supposed to be doing with my friends for fun. And I was so into it that I was like ruining my, like, I hated something that I really loved to do. And I just was like, I'm not enjoying this. And I was thinking a lot about what if I'm hopefully going to be an adult. Like, I'm going to grow up and hopefully get married, have kids. And I never wanted to feel that addiction where I'd come home, I'd have a kid, my kid would come home from school or from a baseball game, and he'd come home and I'd be watching the football game and like not immediately want to turn that off. And that can sound very intense and very insane, but to me that felt really very real. And I decided, like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I stopped playing fantasy football for a few years, and now I've gotten a little bit back into it as I've gotten more controlled. But it was just that idea of being aware. A lot of times we're not aware of what we're addicted to, of what really takes up so much of our time. If we really wrote it down, really kept track of how much time, right? It's that notification those of us on have iPhones get on Sundays if you haven't turned it off yet. How much is your weekly screen time report? I think that can be a real big indicator of where you're spending your time.
Yeah. You answer one alert, you look something up, and all of a sudden it's 20 minutes later. And that's how the technology is designed. It's designed to keep as much of your attention as possible. I've been thinking about it a lot lately. You know, I got a question here for Ben in the chat. You know, what percentage of your peers, you know, as a high schooler, don't have Facebook or Instagram? Would you say most of them do? Any of that don't? Is everybody there?
Definitely most people. I mean, Facebook, I don't really know, because I feel like Facebook is an old person thing. Sorry.
It is.
But
it is.
Yeah. But I think mostly everyone has Instagram. Not that they're posting, but, you know, they're definitely on it. You know, I see them on it. And Snapchat, you know, 99%, and I'm that 1% who doesn't have it. You know, it seems such an easy way to talk to people. And I mean, it's so quick, back and forth that, you know, it's, why wouldn't you?
Do you feel the impact of not having Snapchat at this point?
100%. And yeah, I think about getting it sometimes, but I feel like it would stress me out. Just getting the constant, you know, this person snapped you, this person texted you, and just look at this person's story. It would be too much for me. But yes, I definitely feel like I'm missing out somewhat.
And David, because you're in the next age bracket, you're in your 20s. People in their 20s these days, are they on Facebook? Are they on Instagram? Where are they?
Yeah, I think everybody I know has Instagram. They're not necessarily active in posting so much on it, but everyone wants access to the information well. They want to know what's going on. They don't necessarily want to be contributing into it. They want to understand where the dialogue's going. Snapchat, I think people are using. I don't know. To be honest, I'm like the least tech, like social media person. I have Facebook and Instagram just for the podcast. Other than that, I try and check out.
Listen, you're a podcaster. That already puts you into a certain category.
Right. I'm in the content. I guess technically I'm in the content business, but I like to keep my personal life. Weirdly enough, I like to keep my personal life private.
I hear you.
It's a weird balance.
For sure. On our agenda of topics is actually a great question I got in the chat as well. And that is, in your experiences, how is COVID affecting young adults? And I think the fact that we have two young people from two slightly different, you know, age brackets is really helpful here because I think it's very different, amongst the two different peer groups. But Ben, we'll just go in age order. Ben, do you want to tell us how is COVID affecting your cohort?
So there's been a lot of down, definitely. I think, you know, teenagers just want to be around each other, and, you know, we're very social and we love to touch each other and, you know, like high five each other, and just not being able to touch each other has been, I know it sounds weird, but it's been really hard. And, you know, to not sit on the grade floor next to each other and, you know, be 6 feet apart on a dot has really, you know, it's hurt and it's been annoying. And, you know, in quarantine, people have been on my podcast, and, you know, I've heard people, you know, who have listened to my podcast, you know, just started crying because it felt so real. On the other hand, though, I know people who have, you know, loved quarantine because there was not a lot of schoolwork, there was not a lot of homework, you know, school is a joke, and, you know, school is really their main stressor. And when school is out of the picture, they were able to, you know, exercise and read and do the things that they love. So it's really gone both ways, mostly, you know, negative though.
Interesting. Thank you. Yeah, David?
COVID has impacted in so many ways, both positive and negative. On the positive side, I've spoken to a lot of people who have taken up hobbies. Someone who came on the podcast talked about learning how to juggle, learning how to bake bread. Some others have said it's forced them to become a lot closer with their families. They were living in New York City, and there's no reason to pay that rent for them in New York. So they moved home and their families got closer. On the negative, people have to give up their apartments and move back home with their families at 20, in the mid 20s, you know, it's hard to adjust from that independent life and going back and living under rules. It's caused a lot of trap with people just not being able to, I think Ben talked about some of the younger people, but I think just the inability to just give a hug. I'll never forget I think it was like a month and a half ago where, you know, I met up with a friend, you know, we were distancing, and I like gave him the elbow to tap, and he's like, no, get over here, and just gave me a big hug. And I was like, this is the first hug I've had in 9.5 months, or like whatever, how many months it's been, like since COVID started. And I'm like, you don't realize how much like you miss it until it's gone. And it's definitely had an impact. A lot of people on the other hand have become very aware. They've learned a lot about themselves. They've learned what issues they've had. And I think that's, at the end of the day, if you can learn something about yourself and learn the way to really handle, become aware of it, identify problem, then isolate it and come up with a plan to fix that problem, then I think COVID for a lot of people has become not necessarily such a negative, but not everyone's had that luxury. It's very difficult.
Yeah. It's interesting. Outside of my immediate family, I have hugged one person since February, and I have shaked, I think, one person's hand since February. I'm not exaggerating, and it's really remarkable. But David, something you said made me realize something, and that is that I wonder if one of the many different outcomes of COVID is a greater awareness. Perhaps, you know, COVID has helped to advance the awareness and lessen a little bit more the stigma of mental health now that more people have experienced, whether it's the disconnection or the anxiety or perhaps fear. Would you guys agree that's one of the effects of COVID, that perhaps more people have been exposed to mental health challenges? Is that something that you've seen?
1,000%. But I think there's no denying it. I think there's been an awakening. I think people have experienced unbelievable pain and suffering. I think they've experienced extreme loneliness. There are people I just think of the elderly that have been locked in their house, their apartments, been not able to see their families, kids not being able to see their friends, teenagers not being able to go through the rite of passage of being a teenager, college students. And for kids my age, just not being able to be a 25-year-old kid. I think a lot about it as we approach as we're nearing the 1 year mark, just thinking about it, like we lost a year of our 20s. When we look back in our life, what are we going to take away from it? And I think that one of the biggest takeaways is I've always thought that people were willing to talk more about mental health. I now have proof of concept that they will. And the fact that people are willing to talk about it at least can be a small bright side.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I agree with David in that we're going to walk away from this experience. And I think we're all going to ask ourselves, what did we learn about this, you know, about the world? And what did we learn about ourselves? And, you know, this is going to make us go back to our, you know, introspection throughout the year, and then, you know, force us to think about ourselves again whenever this is over, and really think, you know, what we learned about ourselves, how strong or weak we are, and, you know, what we learned about ourselves.
Another question I was thinking about as I was listening to you guys, and maybe I should have asked this all the way at the beginning, but what was your goal in starting your podcast, and do you feel like you achieved that goal? You're on your way to achieving that goal. And is there anything that you learned that you did not expect you would learn out of the experience of doing a podcast on mental health? Either one.
I think that I had two main goals when creating the podcast. One was for people who didn't suffer from mental illness, which is that, you know, it's real, it exists, and, you know, you should really treat it with respect. And the people who suffer from it are really normal people, you know, who are high functioning people who, you know, are people in your lives. And the other goal was for people who do suffer from mental health to say, you know, hey, you're not alone. There are normal, high functioning people who also are going what you're going through. And I would say that I have, you know, I've been starting to succeed in both goals. The first goal, you know, for people who don't suffer from mental health, I had friends listen to my, you know, first couple episodes, and they said, oh, well, that doesn't make sense. It's just weird. It doesn't make any sense. And I was speaking actually with one today, and he said, you know, it just, mental health kind of seems more real after listening to all your podcasts. So that made me really happy. The other goal, I really do think that people are, you know, people with mental health are really finding comfort in hearing these people's stories. I've gotten a lot of people saying, Ben, this is great. I really feel heard. So yeah, it's been overall a positive experience.
Now, when I started this podcast, I don't think I even knew exactly why I was doing it. And I learned after every episode why I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I was somebody who dealt with anxiety as a kid without knowing what anxiety even was. And as I've gotten to speak with friends that I went to high school with, people that I hadn't spoken to since literally graduation, and getting to understand that we were having these conversations with friends, with people that I'd meet, and we get in depth, we talk about these issues. And I wanted those conversations to come to light. My goal was not to be the most professional person. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a professional. And that was my goal, was to create the place and the platform and facilitate those conversations, create a space for those dialogues to happen, where people could go, open up, share whatever it is that they're going through, their ideas, their beliefs, their personal experiences, in a place where people can go and to listen to them and to know that they can come away knowing that they're not alone. They're not the only person that's dealt with it. That there is a path back, that there is a path forward, that they can grow from it. And I have to say, the number one feedback, I usually get two pieces of feedback from after doing it. One is, oh my God, that wasn't as scary as I thought. And I shouldn't have been that nervous. And then the other part is, wow, that felt very therapeutic. I didn't know that I even thought the way that I thought. When you think, that's the funny thing with thoughts, that they are just that thoughts. So when you have to put them into verbal words, when you actually have to speak out loud, you actually find out what you really do believe and what you don't believe. And that experience has been something that all my guests have found. And I have to tell you, that's something that I've learned. It's really challenged my own beliefs, and I change my thoughts processes on it all the time based off of the new information. And I've been the privilege of, you know, hosting these conversations.
That's great. You know, both of you guys mentioned the concept. You use two different words, but I think it's a similar concept. You know, Ben, when you talked about, I don't know if you use this word or not, so you'll forgive me, but what you were basically saying to me sounded like normalizing. You know, we want to normalize the conversation around mental health. We want to make it a normal thing. We want to make it something that, you know, people would not have, you know, any or too much self-consciousness about. So you talked about normalize, and David, you use the phrase of creating a space to talk about these things. And I think both of these concepts, to normalize and to create space, are so important. And the fact that, you know, that was your goals. Although David, I definitely got a kick out of the fact that you kind of just dove into it. I find that so courageous, you know, not even sure what your goal is. I think that's great. But the fact that ultimately is both of your goals in terms of normalizing and creating that space, I think is so important, because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to achieve. If we're going to advance and make progress on the stigma, is to normalize these conversations, to create the space for people to do that. And I think, you know, both of you are modeling that so beautifully. And it's really, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the content of the work, but just the fact that you're doing this, the fact that you have this podcast, the fact that you are honoring these kinds of conversations in and of itself, I think, can be very, very inspiring to people, and normalizing and creating that space. I just got a question in the chat. Is there a topic in particular that you have found, you know, most prevalent over the course of your podcast? You know, forgive me for jumping in, but if I had to guess, you know, I mean, I confess, I haven't listened to every single episode of both of your podcasts. I've listened to many of them. But if I had to guess, you know, anxiety, I think is something that affects many, many people. You can get into then to different things, but I wonder if it's anxiety. If it's not anxiety, tell me what do you guys find most prevalent in the conversations you're having?
It is 100% anxiety. It really stems from, you know, anxious about school, anxious about, and someone on the podcast who lost her father, and she was anxious whenever she left her family. Really, really just certain things that just trigger people. And it, you know, it really just shows that, you know, when I interviewed all these people, my final question for them was, what can we do to, you know, limit anxiety in our society, because it's so prevalent? And they all said, stop the pressure of school and stop the pressure of colleges and stop the pressure of standardized tests. It really all stems from this big pressure that we place on school and college placement, which can really be corrected for, you know, the health benefit of teenagers.
Is that a message to parents?
I mean, yes, and also, you know, a message to kids. You know, we SAR does a very good job of keeping the college admissions process, you know, quiet. No one's supposed to speak about it. Really just, you know, we shouldn't speak about tests with each other and that kind of things, because it really just makes it worse and, you know, builds everything up. And, you know, also for parents, I know parents sometimes have expectations for kids and they want their kids to do well, of course. And, you know, that could also add some pressure on kids. And really, if parents sit their kids down and say, you know, we love you no matter what, we want you to try your hardest, but, you know, it's okay if you know, you don't get all A pluses, it'll really take off some of the pressure from kids.
It's very important. It really is. David.
Anxiety seems to be the major thread what I try and do is get to is understand where the anxiety comes from and kind of get underneath it. I would say that other than anxiety, I think issues with vulnerability, the fear of vulnerability and opening up has been very prevalent and a very common theme in people who have spoke about their anxiety, their fear of control that leads to the idea of that if they open up and talk about it, they will feel misunderstood and hurt, and they're afraid to take that gamble. These are also people that are in different stages in their lives and coming from different places, but where that anxiety, most of the common thread really is in that anxiety where they are in places where they're not sure, they don't have any control. Some of it can stem from their jobs. A lot of it stemmed back to what Ben was talking about when we first realized what anxiety was. It was in school. It was usually around that junior year where the pressure's on. You have to take the right classes. You have to do, how many APs do I have to take? And if I take these courses and I need to get above a certain grade, so that way I can get into the right college. So if I go to the right college, I can get into the right grad school. If I get into the right grad school, I can go get the right job. And in that process, they have very little control. No, they're not the ones that are coming up with their plan. Their plan's been coming. Their parents have made the plan. Their administrators have made the plan. And they really feel that a lot of people wake up at 23, 24 years old. They just graduated college with a degree and actually don't really know anything about themselves. They don't know what they want or what they need. And the existential question of identity stems from vulnerability and creates a lot of anxiety.
I have to add on to what David just said. I was speaking with my mom about you know, college admissions the other day, and she asked me, Ben, what's the end goal? Like what do you want in life? And it really made me think, like, wow, like, you know, when I look back, when I'm 6 years old, 7 years old, am I going to care what college I went to? Am I going to care what APs I took? Like, I mean, I want relationships. I want to be happy, and I want a meaningful job. And, you know, a meaningful job doesn't necessarily entail that I get, you know, into a great college and great scores and all that stuff.
Wow. Wow. That's it's not easy to say those things. It's, you know, especially when you're bombarded by so many other, you know, competing values, you know, that you're exposed to, you know, on TV, in social media, talking to your friends. And especially, I think there's a unique pressure, you know, growing up in a monoorthodox community where, you know, going to college, getting an advanced degree is so common. The high price of orthodox living in America, I think creates a lot of pressure and a lot of pressure for success. I can just ask you if you guys agree, and I'm sure you'll agree, but what do you think about that in terms of, you know, what's unique to our community and the pressures that are unique to our community? How do you guys see that playing out?
Yeah, there definitely is some pressure to conform into this common mold, I should say. And, you know, some of it is, you know, makes sense. It's expensive to raise a modern Orthodox family in America, so you should, you know, get a high paying job. But, you know, a lot of it, you know, for kids who don't want to be doctors or lawyers, you know, it's hard to, you know, stand out, and that can cause a lot of anxiety and a lot of tension with parents.
Yeah. Yeah. David, would you add anything?
Yeah, I think you hit it. I think you kind of broached the topic. I think this is it. I can tell you, it's one of the most common things that people my age are talking about. There's a big fear of not being able to recreate what our parents created. We're able to do. We have a great idea of what the costs are. There don't seem the costs of tuition, the cost of kosher food, the cost of all of this. This keeping up with the Joneses mentality doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So we're calculating the costs, and that's creating a lot of anxiety. We want to get married. Well, that costs money. We want to have kids. That each kid costs X amount of dollars. And we're doing the math, and it's leading us, it's creating a lot of anxiety. It's leading people to not want to conform. I think it's doing a real disservice. And I think where it needs to change, I think communities need to really reevaluate how they structured schooling. If you really think about the modern Orthodox yeshiva high school dynamic, co-ed and not co-ed, but you take kids ages 14 to 18, hormones ranging, a ton of change going on in their lives, dual curriculum. If you're in clubs, good luck doing it, and you're supposed to do all your homework 4 tests, 5 essays a week. You're supposed to be doing all this work while also being perfect and on all the social media and having to keep up with all these things. At the end of the day, there's a price that's paid. And that's, I believe, why a lot of kids, when they get to college, end up having a lot of anxiety and fall into depression. I think that there needs to be a reevaluation of how we prioritize certain topics and the way we even look at structuring school. I don't think it can last much longer. I think we're nearing a breaking point.
Really interesting. I think that, I wonder how we even start that conversation. I mean, it's easy to say like, okay, we're having it now, but I wonder if there's anything specific that you guys think that we would tackle first. Like, let's say you guys were in charge of running a mental health day, civically, addressing our community, the young people in our community. What would you pick? Let me ask a different question. Let's say you had all the principals and all the rabbis of the community in a room together, and we got to this topic. What would you recommend to them? What would you, we can't come up with answers and solutions right here, right now, but how would you begin that conversation? If you were sitting in front of all these principals and rabbis and saying like, listen, there's a lot of pressure in our community on young people and a community with that has enjoyed so much success. What would be some of the first changes or areas of change that you would tackle first?
I think I would start by saying that 1 in 5 people in your school have a mental disorder, not like in an attacking way, just, making them, think about the gravity of the situation we're talking about. And then I'll say, college admissions, it's got to change. I think many principals are starting to realize that, the college admission process is just way overhyped. And, then saying, take out the need or the, whether it be explicit or implicit, the praise of normal modern Orthodox lifestyles, which I think kind of pervades our education, and really changing that will make people feel less anxious, kids feel less anxious to follow the normal modern Orthodox life.
Less of an emphasis on success, less of an emphasis on the ideal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And more, becoming, your true self and, thinking as a Jew and how it relates to being an American citizen, really just more on the individual and not just shoving you into this mold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting question. I think the message is you need to find a few things to focus on. Trying to solve it all one shot and to give a few messages never works. But I think they need to really consider how sustainable our track is. How much longer can we really go with this? I can tell you from kids growing up my age, the modern Orthodox split is. It's happening. People don't believe they can afford to raise, and they don't want to sacrifice everything to raise their kids that way. It wasn't hammered into them as kids. They, even whatever Orthodox religion, modern Orthodox Judaism they've been taught is not hammered home and prioritized them over those things. So they are willing to sacrifice those values to slip on a few things just to make it through. So you really need to reevaluate how effective your system actually is. And a few things to really point home is, How many resources are we putting into mental health versus what are we so sure that kids need to learn about ancient China and all these certain history topics and science topics and less about knowing, understanding what they're actually going through in terms of mental health, understanding, they are going to be feeling this way. And what is it, if you are feeling anxious, what are things you can actually do? What's actually going on? What's the science behind it? Why is my body reacting this way? And understanding that those are okay. You start having kids are be a lot, I think we might be a more able to have conversations and would be more willing to talk about it. They're learning about it in school as opposed to relating to ancient history. And I'm not saying history doesn't have a place. I think history is important, but how much time and resources are we allocating? How many mental health professionals do we have in these high schools? And the last message would be to education. We spend all this money in education. And I think everyone kind of forgets, and it's my own personal belief that education starts at home. you can spend all this money on tuition and all these things, but at the end of the day, where the kid learns the most is usually at home. I know it was true for me. I learned about mental health at an early age just from my parents struggling in school. My parents understood it more than I did as a young kid. They would give myself mental health days. I had those. I was really lucky to have parents that understood it at such an earlier time.
All right, so let's wrap up with one last question. This is a really kind of like interview kind of question. You'll forgive me, what are some of your favorite resources, books, authors? Where do you go when you want to either read up or research on issues of mental health in any way?
The internet. The internet is great. I mean, just you could really find so much just about anything. And you know, I of course try to find the unbiased stuff. But even today, I just before this interview, I was looking at you know how addiction affects teenagers and you know and gray matter in the brain, and it's just there's so much and it could be so specific. So I'm sorry to say, but it is the internet.
I just talk to people, friends. I ask them what they think. I found that the best way to really understand it. And you know, statistics and data are great, and reading these studies are great. But if I want to know, I want to know more personal style. As a modern Orthodox Jewish kid, I don't have the same issues as other people. And if I want to really understand what's going on in people that I'm speaking to in the greater conversation, the best way I found to do that is just to ask them, what do you think? What's going on? And I've been very lucky to have some really good friends that are willing to just to talk some people talk for an hour or two just to go back and forth on ideas. And that's how I've learned a lot. Of course, I took some psychology classes. I think everyone's taken some psychology classes in their lives once you get to 25. But I think the best way to really learn and the best resources are us, ourselves, our own thoughts, our own feelings, and our own beliefs.
Wow. Wow. All right, quickly, both of you tell me, how do people find your podcasts?
They think I'm doing a good thing.
No, I'm saying like if somebody wanted to look up your podcast platform.
So awkward.
everyone thinks it's awesome. That much we know.
they can find it on Apple Pod, really anywhere you get your podcast. Apple Podcast, Spotify, the podcast app, Overcast, Pocket Cast, I think, Anchor.
And they just search for Your Life Sucks.
Yes. Or Ben Small. And they can find me on Instagram at the Your Life Sucks Podcast.
Fantastic. And David?
Yeah, the same. Yeah, you can find me at Don't Worry About It, BOUTIT, Don't Worry About It Podcast. You can find me on Apple, Spotify, anywhere, Instagram. And that's really it. It's really simple. Everyone has a smartphone, you have a podcast app, or you have Spotify. It's right there. All you got to do is click subscribe.
Fantastic. You know, Hashem created the world by speaking. Hashem said 10 things, right? Basar Mamaros, Hashem created the world by 10 things. Just by speaking, we can accomplish so much. And I think that's one of the primary takeaway lessons from this conversation. Creating that space, normalizing the conversation, it gives us the ability to provide so much for each other. Ben, David, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Kol hakavod on the work that you're doing. I look forward to listening to future episodes from you guys. And let's do this again sometime in the future. There's always stuff to talk about.
A big thank you to Rabbi Chaim Pupko for hosting and facilitating this conversation. As somebody who hosts and facilitates conversations, I know how difficult it can be, and he did, in my opinion, an incredible job of keeping the conversation going and factoring in on so many interesting and important topics. And also a big thank you to Ben Small for also being part of this conversation. Seeing what he's doing gives me a lot of hope for this movement and what's going on for teenagers to be able to do that. It's unbelievable. If anybody out there is interested, please check out the Your Life Sucks podcast. It's available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you can find podcasts. And you should follow him on Instagram at the Your Life Sucks podcast. I'll put the links in the show notes below. If anybody out there is interested in coming onto the podcast or knows of anybody that might be interested or thinks that I should reach out to or any topics that I should cover, please reach out to me. Let me know what you want. I'm happy to have a chat, focus, learn, develop, just trying to get better. Please reach out at don'tworryaboutitpodcast@gmail.com or DM me through Don't Worry About It Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you guys once again so much for listening, and please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. I'll see you next week. This conversation was hosted and facilitated by Rabbi Chaim Pucko, where myself and Ben Small were the panelists. It's the first time that I've ever been really asked and directed at questions, and I really enjoyed the experience. It was definitely a nice change of pace from being the host and the facilitator for a change. Hope you guys enjoy the episode. Let me know what you think.